middle of the road has been shown to a jury. Our Home Affairs correspondent Mark White is at the Old Bailey.
Drummer Lee Rigby's family left the court visibly distressed after they saw CCTV images of the fusilier in the minutes before his death. The jury was then shown graphic video of the car the Crown claims the defendants were in, driving at speed and knocking Lee Rigby over as he crossed the road. Moments later, he was dead, stabbed to death, it's claimed, by the two accused who deny the charges.
Nigella Lawson's ex-husband, Charles Sarchie, says he doesn't know if she's ever taken drugs. He's told a court that an email in which he mentioned alleged drug use referred to the defence he was expecting their two former personal assistants to mount. Sisters Francesca and Elisabetta Grillo deny fraud. Mairead Philpott has lost her appeal against the 17-year prison sentence imposed for the manslaughter of her six children. The 33-year-old was jailed alongside her husband Mick at Nottingham Crown Court in April. He was given life. Mairead's father, Jimmy Duffy, spoke outside court.
She should have just got on with the sentence she got. Them children got no chance of appealing. Why should she get a chance?
The number of hospitals being investigated over links to Jimmy Savile has risen to 32. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt's ordered inquiries at another 19 sites the DJ is said to have visited. New mums and dads will be able to share up to 50 weeks of parental leave by April 2015. Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg says the move will help to stop women feeling they have to choose between having a career and having a baby. And an unusual seaside property has gone on the market, an entire pier. The 780-foot-long Paignton Pier in Devon, which features an arcade and ice cream and sweet shops, is being sold as a going concern for nearly £2 million. It was first opened back in 1879. That's the latest. I'm Andy Hayes.
This is your award-winning BCFM. BCFM on 93.2, 24 hours a day.
It's Friday, yes, it's 5 o'clock, and BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. Helping us review this week's news is Labour councillor for South Mead, Jenny Smith. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, is Chancellor of the Exchequer George Osborne a cokehead in denial? Why is he trying to cover up his coke-snorting exploits in the 1990s? We hear former dominatrix and author of Chief Whip, Natalie Rowe, and how she was raided by the police when she released a photo of herself with George Osborne with a gram of cocaine on the table. His lawyers have been threatening the papers not to print that photo too. Also, the sad death this week of World War II MI6 agent and confidant of Ian Fleming and Winston Churchill and Lord Mountbatten of Burma, as well as King George VI himself. I'm talking about John Ainsworth Davis, known affectionately as Jad. He said he was involved in a daring raid at the end of the war to snatch the Nazi loot for the Allies in the form of Hitler's party secretary and treasurer Martin Bormann. Using the pen name Christopher Crichton to get round the Official Secrets Act, he wrote the gripping book Op JB and said that Fleming's famous James Bond books were a subtle hint back to this top-secret wartime mission. Also, Beast Technology. How would you like a superpower pill that lets you into cars and through every bit of security just by touching it? The coolest pill in the world? Or a technology too far from former DARPA director Regina Duggan? Plus, Martin Summers takes us on a tour of the world's hotspots, which I imagine this week will include China. That's all in the second hour after 6 o'clock. On to our news review in a minute. First, though, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 3 Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs up to 9. Fairly sunny weekend. How's that? If you can actually get out there before it gets dark. Next week, highs of 7 Celsius, another sunny week with some frosty nights in the middle of the week. Next weekend, that's the 8th and 9th of December, highs 1 Celsius, fairly sunny but feeling cold. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So helping us review the news this week is Labour Councillor for South Mead, Jenny Smith. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to Drive Time.
Thank you.
First of all, tell us a bit about what's been going on in South Mead. What's the issues that have been brought up by people down there?
Oh, I've had a number of cases of the bedroom tax. Also having cases where people are being refused. Their doctors are referring them through, and then they're refused by the NHS to actually let them have their operations.
Why is that?
Two hernia operations. I would like to know why that was. That was happening formerly under the old PCT, and I did a freedom of information to get the list of which operations were being blocked, and it was extensive, pages of it. Now, what's worrying me is in Bristol, there must be people that think they're the only ones that are not getting their operations done. And it would be very interesting to see how many of those are in the community. The ones I've recently picked up are hernia operations, where one young lad is off work, unemployed, can't go back to employment because he can't have his operation. And the other one is has substantial difficulties and has an illness which is very rare, but wants the hernia operation because what was happening was he was using weightlifting and other things to actually help himself get over depression.
Well, if you can get hold of your counsellor, which I've found it several counsellors in the city impossible to even get to speak to them, if you can get hold of your counsellor, like people obviously have with you, Jenny, what can counsellors do in these sorts of situations?
Can I first of all tell you that all Labour counsellors have surgeries. We all hold surgeries. Ours is in the local library, various venues within the ward itself, and they are regular on a monthly basis. I can't say for other parties because I think some of them believe that the only way that the electorate should get hold of them is to phone them.
Well, that's actually sometimes more convenient, isn't it, to pick up the phone and have a chat with your counsellor rather than to have to first of all find out where and when the surgery is, and then for some people who actually may be housebound, it's impossible to make it.
Yes,
there.
And I quite agree with you, so that we Southmead councillors, you can phone us, you can come in on email, and on occasions when there's possibly some complaint about the condition in the property or the house, or the person has difficulties communicating, we go to their homes.
But what can you actually do?
I win some, and I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't. I'd have stopped years ago. And it's about knowing I've got a box which says, where do I? And the where do I boxes have contacts and headings of where I go for street lights, dog mess, disrepair with council tenancies, bad conditions in the private sector housing, how I actually can work through when people are homeless and what the procedures are, multiple debt, who might help, whether I can help as well. And to know, the public don't know, and I didn't know as a councillor. I had on a number of occasions had people being evicted by the city council, and I put a case together and contacted the department and said, look, I really think you hold this back long enough, and I can only do it when it's some reason for holding it back, but if you hold it back long enough, we may possibly be able to solve this, or we can work with you to work it through. I didn't know there was a duty when a councillor contacts with substantial evidence like that to hold back for 30 days an eviction from a council property. And it's things like that that we councillors can do. We can't walk on water. Some cases you feel absolutely bad about because you don't win. But we are there for that. And also the public don't realise what they're doing is providing us with enough information that we can actually learn what isn't working on the local authority or in other parts.
But hang on a minute. I mean, you're on the local authority. How come you could be a councillor going to all these meetings, whether it's scrutiny commissions or whatever it is, and you still rely on ordinary people just to tell you what's really going on?
Yes.
That implies that you're not being told the full picture by council
officers. Well, it's not that. I mean, I go to all the health meetings, but I don't go to all the housing meetings or the community meetings or the park meetings because I haven't got enough life to. And really what we're councillors are, where they have strengths in certain areas and not in others. But the public make you go and research and find out how you can actually help them. And by helping them, you are learning and you get more knowledge feedback.
Now, you mentioned the bedroom tax there. What sort of problems have you been coming up against?
Oh, I had, case I remember most, was a fully adapted council house for a woman that couldn't even get to her front door. Her son had just got on a university place or a training case up in the Birmingham area. It wasn't for 3 or 4 years, it was about 6 months, but they were told that they had to size down because they had a 3-bedroom property. They're now in a 1-bedroom property, which means that despite all the equipment for helping her breathe and all the rest of it, her husband's having to sleep in the same bedroom with all that equipment. And sometimes there's substantial equipment to keep some of these people alive. And the son, who's gone off on his course, can't come back home to mum and dad at the end of it. I don't think that's just. There were 2 cases in the ward where people who weren't quite 63, which is the cut-off date, one of which was almost terminally ill at going into hospital and out of hospital, were both told that they would have their benefit cut. Now, it seems to me there are moments in life when you do not threaten to evict somebody for lack of having the finance to top up on their rent when they are terminally ill or having to have a major operation. And there doesn't seem to be any humanity or sense built into this, because at the end of the day, the local authority, if they haven't got a roof and we haven't got enough 1 or 2 bedrooms, has to put them into bed and breakfast or hostels or somewhere else, which is not good for them. And it's not good for the ratepayers, because sometimes they cost more than if you left them alone with a debt.
But isn't it all really just a numbers game? And the city is, London is running the country, and the local authority, all you're able to do as councillors really, is to put your finger in the dike and decide where the next cuts are going to be, because the cuts are almost inevitable, aren't they?
Yes, I'm sitting in at the moment on budget meetings. I've actually been to a committee that I am not on, just to find out what resources finance is actually up to and what they're being told. And I'm listening to George Ferguson. I wish he'd make up his mind whether he's saying one minute there are no cuts and the next we're cutting to the bone. Please, you're cutting. Just acknowledge that. It's what, how and who it's going to affect are the most important things everybody should be asking. And whether by removing certain circumstances, again, you will have a knock-on effect which will cost the people who are paying the taxes in this city more than if we had supported that service.
But I mean, do you see George Ferguson having a go at the city for doing all this? Because, I mean, this is a problem which was caused by the City of London and the international financial system. It's not caused by the people who are the victims, like the lady you were talking about with who's had to move because of the bedroom tax into a single bedroom with all her equipment.
No, this is caused by the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrat coalition. They've thought this one up, not thought it through, and with a lot more that's happening with local people.
But that means, to be fair, Jenny, they're not. It's not down to them, surely. It's down to Westminster, to the City of London, and to the coalition government up in London.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're just being told.
Which is a coalition of Tories and Liberals, and it's their fault. But at the same time, the economy in this city is going to be rocked. 90 million will have an effect on other services that are provided in the city, and it's the finances from the city council as a whole is adjudged to be about 16 billion.
So where is this 90 million pounds worth of cuts? Is that over just a short period of time, a long period of time? And also the figure itself seems to keep changing.
Yes.
There's also apparently a load of extra money, maybe up to another £5-6 million, which is going to have to be used to pay the redundancy payments for members of the staff at the City Council that are being sacked. So the figure seems to be shifting all the time.
Now, the meeting I went to wasn't confidential, and they're saying that some of that to pay the redundancies will have to come out of the capital receipt money. So that will actually leave us probably, if we have a major disaster, a flooding, a fire, anything that we have to go and help with financially, we may not have enough reserves to cover it. And that's worrying.
Now, I know you're politically opposed to him, but is George Ferguson still wearing his merchant venturer's shoes? I mean, because, of course, they are mainly investment bankers and these kinds of people, the super rich of the city, the people that own vast areas of land, massive investments. And to what extent is he distancing himself from the whole bankster mentality?
Well, one of the things I had to do when George Ferguson was first elected was ask why he hadn't made a declaration of all his financial interests in the city like the rest of us councillors. You can go on to the internet and you can look on the Bristol City site and you can actually see what each one of us are involved in and where we might have vested interests. He did produce one, but then I keep hearing of others that aren't on the lists, and I sincerely hope that I'm hearing incorrectly.
Well, this isn't good enough, is it? If it's somebody who's in a political position, that they have simply got to make the declaration of interests. Otherwise, they could be, for example, George has brought in this guy, Matt Payne, from KPMG, and then he's done a deal to buy KPMG's headquarters in the city. I mean, what's to say that there wasn't some kind of quid pro quo there? And this guy, Matt Payne, who's come in as a volunteer, it seems a little bit peculiar, doesn't it, that someone should volunteer their time to work for the City Council to help prepare the budget, and then suddenly the deal is done to buy their headquarters by the City Council.
Yeah, but we aren't told these things until they actually happen. Found out that a few minutes before we had our last health care and wellbeing scrutiny committee, that the director of health for the city had actually resigned and was leaving the next day, Janet Maxwell. And we didn't know. There doesn't seem to be a new appointment, and the health for services, the way we work with them and the service that is provided for people in this city, is absolutely paramount to the well-being of so many of its residents.
So how do members of the public find out what's really going on at the City Council? Because that sort of thing, for example, that wasn't reported, at least I didn't see it reported in the Evening Post, for example.
No, I haven't seen that in the Evening Post. And it was united. All three parties sitting in that scrutiny were absolutely appalled that this should have happened without any of us knowing at all. So we didn't know as councillors, and it doesn't look like the Evening Post is covering it or any of the Bristol media, other than yourselves, which I'm now telling
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, you don't know everything, so you can only tell what you know. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, let's just bring you in here, because, I come back to this point of these 90 million, give or take a few million, because they're not being really that specific about it, of cuts. How necessary are they really, and what effect is it going to have on the city?
Well, I would say they're not necessary at all. You shouldn't, in fact, be cutting things like this at this moment. I think you've got to separate out. We as the Labour Party, have gone into coalition to run the city with the other parties, and that's in a sense accepting central government's diktat, because that's nothing else you can do about it. So I would see the role of the Labour Party in that position as trying to make sure that the cuts are cause as little damage as they can. But we're not in a position to say we're not going to cut. I know there are those to our left who say that we should refuse to cut altogether, but that, in a way, if we were going to do that, we wouldn't be in the coalition with Ferguson anyway. So I don't think that's realistic.
You seem to be taking both positions at the same
time. No, I think it's quite straightforward. I mean, in the idea of not setting a budget and refusing to cut was pioneered by the Labour councillor in Poplar 1930s, I think it was 1930s, 1890s actually, and of course Liverpool City Council famously tried to do the same thing in the 1980s, and it just doesn't work because if you refuse to cut, they just cut all the money off, and eventually the people are prosecuted and they're not actually strong enough to stand up to it. So given the balance of power, we are in a position where we have to cut at local level, but there is no case for cutting at local level. There's no case for cutting public expenditure at all, in my view. And we had Barbara Yank on the show last week, and she was coming up with the usual story, which is we've got to cut. The question is, what are we going to cut? And I would say we are cutting because we've got no option at local level, but we shouldn't be cutting at all. What we should be doing to break the back of this recession is investing in the future in physical and human infrastructure. And we should write a list of things that we want to do. That's what crises allow you to do. And then you say, well, where are we going to get the money from? Well, there's a number of places we could get it from.
Well, one bit of infrastructure, for example, Jenny, is the South Bristol Link Road, which it looks like is going to get a go ahead. I mean, at least that's something positive, isn't it?
Not as far as I'm concerned. You're talking to someone from South Bristol, aren't you? As far as I'm concerned, it will mean that the city will be ringed by a major roadworks that will cause pollution, noise pollution, environmental pollution. And if we really, really do value the green countryside that we are surrounded about by, surely there's going to be another alternative to this. But then some of us in the Labour group are against it, some of us, some others are for. So you have disagreement going on in the group.
Well, you certainly do. I mean, we had Derek Pickup in here, for example, the other week. I don't know if you would like to just comment about
wonderful.
That.
He thinks it's wonderful.
Because, I mean, the thing is, he's actually left, hasn't he? He's left the Labour group unofficially, although he's voting with the Labour group. Can you just explain how that's all come about and how it is that the Labour Party actually picks its candidates for local elections and possibly for the general elections too? Because that was the case at point. How does the Labour Party actually do it?
Well, we have a process that is set down with rules and regulations. I can't say about what happened to Derek because hopefully it's to be investigated independently, which I think is the only way out of it. I went through the process, which meant that, first of all, I was checked to see whether I was attending meetings and had been a councillor that was carrying out what I should be carrying out. Then I had to proceed to three people from the Bristol Labour Party interviewing me independently. Again, I was asked loads and loads of questions, and I had to do a written report of what I'd done and all the rest of it. And I got through. I can't say on someone else's individual what happened to that interview.
So that panel of three people, how are they? How is it decided who's on that panel then?
I think the executive of the Bristol Labour Party decide who's
and
on
who
that.
And who is on that panel? Are they councillors or are they just local members of the party?
Local members of the party and some councillors. It's a mixture.
So and who knows?
There's also trade union reps on there.
Okay, so if you've got three people, who are they?
Well, they're just members that are...
Who are the actual individuals?
...have been voted on to that executive committee.
Voted by the executive or by the
membership? By the members of the party.
Right.
And councillors and ordinary members do that.
I just find the whole process a little bit untransparent. First of all, can you not just tell us who these three individuals are on this panel that do this scrutiny?
Well, it's not always the same three. It's a mixture.
Okay. And
it should be a mixture.
Right, so it depends who you get on your panel as to what happens there.
Yes.
I just think these things are quite important as to who gets selected, because we've had all sorts of trouble with the Labour Party, particularly up in Kingswood, where someone, it looks, has been brought in from London who to stand there under the noses of a lot of local activists in the local Labour Party. Anyway, whilst I mention Kingswood, must also mention this... dreadful news story this week. The Bristol woman killed herself after her benefits were stopped. Nurse Christine Norman, whose sister Jacqueline Harris took her own life. Her family said she took her own life after being refused benefits. This was on the Bristol Post website, but I didn't see it in the actual paper itself. Cited Partially sighted and only able to walk with the aid of a stick, Jacqueline Harris suffered crippling pain due to slipped discs in her back and her neck. Her mobility was reduced further when a dog savaged one of her wrists. Despite being in agony, which strong pain relief drugs, that is, could not ease, the 53-year-old was deemed fit for work following a government health assessment and told to find her job. Her sister claims the verdict she was ineligible for disability benefits drove her to take her own life early this month. Martin, this is a pretty tragic story right in our midst here. A really wonderful woman who spent her life serving the public. She's clearly not able to work with all of these various disabilities, and yet some company called ATOS says she is, and she's taken her own life as a result.
Yes, and I wonder what medical qualifications ATOS has to make decisions about whether people should work or not. I mean, the system as it used to be was that medical people, doctors, decide whether people are fit for work.
Well, and it does actually talk about that a little bit in the report here. The appointment at the assessment centre last year, she said her sister spent 2 hours on two buses travelling to the appointment at the centre run by private firm ATOS and spent only 2 minutes having an assessment. The mother of two, Mrs. Norman, said her sister was only asked one question at the assessment: did you get here by bus? She replied with one fateful word: yes. And she hadn't even had the chance to take her coat off, and that was the assessment over.
Yes, and that, they call that a medical assessment. That's an absolute outrage. Now, of course, let's look at the macroeconomics of this. What is the sense of pushing somebody like that into work when you've got 1 million people under the age, able-bodied young people under the age of 25 who have no work and no prospect of work as things stand? They talk about a recovery, but I suspect in the new year we could even face a new crash.
Well, and also the Labour Party this week talking about taking away benefits from under 25s. The Labour Party.
Well, that's if they have been saying that, Tony, that's news to me. And that
no, I didn't hear that either.
Well, Jenny hasn't heard it either. I would be surprised if they were. I mean, what happens?
I thought we were trying to get young people into training. And we were trying to get apprentices back and to be absolutely positive to give them a future.
I think what is happening, Jenny, is that the bookies have now written the Labour Party in as the new government of this country in 2015. The bookies, we're talking Paddy Powers and people like this, they see a Labour majority between 80 and 90. And you saw that the energy companies went to talk to Labour people this week because they know that they're going to be dealing with them as ministers somewhere in the near future. This government is going to go. And the people, and when Ed Miliband made his remarks about the energy companies, shares in those companies went down on the stock market. That shows that the punters, the bookmakers, the people who bet in the City of London know that there's going to be a Labour government.
Well, let me just quote this to you from the Mirror. Labour's Rachel Reeves is considering axing housing and unemployment benefit for the under 25s. The Shadow Work and Pension Secretary is understood to be warming to the idea, mooted at the Tory Party conference last month. Labour's looking at plans which could see people under the age of 25 losing housing benefit and unemployment benefit. Shadow Work and Pension Secretary Rachel Reeves considering the move. As long as single parents and the vulnerable, such as those who have left care, are still protected.
That won't work. There's a lot of youngsters out there that have mislaid their parents. There are children that are orphans that have been in local authority care. There were others that haven't got the skills and abilities to go straight into work.
But Rachel Reeves is promising to be tougher than the Tories on welfare.
Can I just answer this? Rachel Reeves, I was just about to say, before you brought in that information, what is now happening is that future Labour ministers like Rachel are having their arms twisted by the City of London, who you mentioned earlier, and what they're trying to do is make sure that when Labour wins the election, which the bookmakers say they're going to, that they're going to do the same things as the Tories would do anyway. And you know why I'm in the Labour Party? To frustrate people like Rachel Reeves, who is in fact an ex-Cambridge graduate, a rather privileged person in her 30s, and in actual fact she has been chosen by our enemies to be the person
by our enemies. We're getting back down again, aren't we, to how the Labour Party, I mean, you know, we could be talking about the other parties, but we're not, we're talking about the Labour Party. How the Labour Party actually selects people that it's going to put forward to be their spokespeople.
There is an internal struggle going on in the Labour Party, and always has done, between people like Rachel, who will consider things like getting rid of benefits for under 25s, and other people like myself, and I suspect Jenny, who think that's a ridiculous idea. The reason I stay in the Labour Party is to make sure that the Rachels don't get it all their own way.
And I stay in the Labour Party because I would want to encourage more people to come and join us, that we have a major debate, that we have a democracy where people's are valued when they put forward opinions. And when you think that the Labour Party is, some are well heeled, some are well off, others like myself, I came out of the working class, I know exactly what it was like to sleep in a house where we only had one fire, and that was in the kitchen. I grew up in poverty. I've made it, I want others to make it. And if other people feel the same, then all I can say is come into politics, come and help, and let's have a future that we're proud of.
Well, yeah, but Jacqueline Harris, I'm afraid, doesn't, does she?
No, she doesn't.
Took her
it's
life
so
in,
sad.
In Kingswood. How has that come about?
I think that a system has been set up that intends to cut as many people off of benefits as possible. There have been a number of suicides right across the country. One man walked into one of the Department of Works and Pensions offices, threw petrol all over himself and set fire to himself. It is that desperate. These are not people that won't work. These are people that feel so devalued and so worried about the harassment that they're getting. And I mean, I've been talking to someone this week that's just been through one of the interviews, and he said that they were really rude to him.
Well,
these are valued human beings, and I think those that are in charge of these investigations should remember that.
Jacqueline Harris's sister, nurse Christine Norman, said that if Jacqueline had been addicted to alcohol or drugs, she would have been given a sick note. Being a nurse and a health professional, I'm so disappointed. Anyone can see she wasn't fit to work. She would have loved to have had a job, but couldn't. How much grief, pain and anguish do you have to go through before they realise? Following the ruling, her benefits were stopped in January and she sought help through the Citizens Advice Bureau. Her first appeal against the decision failed, unbelievably, but the second appeal was due to be heard at HM Court Tribunal Service on November the 15th.
Yes, the process. The process itself is demoralising for people. But I don't agree that those on drugs and who are alcoholics get a better time either. And certainly the mentally ill don't. And had case after case go through where the mentally ill are taken off of benefits, expected to sign on constantly, and really aren't having any support. If you start to feel that nobody cares about you, that there's no hope for the future for you, then you get so depressed, that's when you end up committing suicide.
Isn't it just a fact, Martin, that at the end of the day, this lady isn't actually representing a positive sign on the balance sheet of the nation? And that's why this has happened,
ultimately. I was just going to come to that point. Let's just think about the economics of this. I would like to say to any potential employers out there, whether they're public or private sector, would you have employed this lady? Because in communist Cuba, everybody's expected to work, but that means that when you're running your little business, we're going to dump five of these people on you. Because they've got to work, we've all got to work, everybody's got to work, so we're going to put five of these people, one with mental illness, one with drug issues, one with alcohol issues, and one who can't walk with a bad back, and you are going to employ them and you are going to pay them a wage. So I can't make a profit like that. So of course you can't. This is communist Cuba. You're not supposed to make a profit. You're now going to manage this on behalf of the state. This is this whole idea that these people could be made to... In Scandinavia, these people are helped into work if they're possible, if it's possible. But it costs money. It costs money. If you're going to help somebody like this to work, they might be able to work 3 days a week, and you're going to have to subsidise their wages.
But I mean, it's changed, you know, Martin, over the years, hasn't it? Because we had homes looking after people like this. Those homes were then closed, and they told her, you've got to look after yourself in your home. And now, someone who's having to... I mean, she's spending most of her time just simply looking after herself because she's so disabled. She's now being told, well, you know, you're not looking after yourself anymore. You've got to go out and fight for a job with
all the able-bodied youngsters under the age of 25. Which is a hopeless task.
But Martin's quite right. I mean, under the previous Labour government, I had somebody who was desperate to get a job, but he kept having fits, he kept passing out, and nobody would take him because they said it was too dangerous to all the other employees in the firm.
That's right.
This is, unless you somehow or other find employment in a safe condition for some of these people, they are a liability to other people. But then they also can have skills that if only you identify then they can contribute.
I think in principle all those who want to work should be helped to work, but that means we're going to have to increase taxes on people in Clifton to pay for it. Now, if the people in Clifton don't want their taxes increased to pay for it, then they should just put up and shut up, pay them their benefits and stop bullying them.
Hospital A&E's swamped, we hear this week, by 500,000 elderly victims of neglect. The Care Quality Commission said their findings suggested some GPs, care homes and community health services are failing to treat vulnerable people in the way they deserve. 500,000 elderly people a year, Jenny, being unnecessarily admitted to hospital as emergency patients because of failings in community care, an official government report said, and this is from the Care Quality Commission. The review into NHS and social care services in England found almost 1 in 10 over 75s had been taken to hospital accident and emergency with avoidable conditions, a rise of over 20%.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the South Bristol Walking Centre is absolutely brilliant, because you can take small things like that in there and you're not being criticised then for because A&Es are absolutely flooded, and I know that. We went on a visit, the health scrutiny, and every cubicle in the place was full. The corridors had people sitting in chairs or waiting to actually be seen, and a majority of them were actually elderly people. Now, they're talking about packaging us older people, and I'm over 75, I'll admit it to everybody. I don't want to have a new doctor visited upon me. I'd like to choose to keep the one I've got. We get on fine. She's honest with me, which is what I want. But for other people, yes, perhaps there's a possibility that they will have an allocated doctor who will go look after them in their own home and do home visits. But at the same time, I don't want to have a service where you're left in your home and forgotten about. And sadly, some of the services we've got at the moment are leaving people either in private nursing homes or in elderly people's accommodation, and they're not having the support that they ought to get.
Oh, Martin, we it's quite clearly a crisis, orchestrated crisis in A&E, as all sorts of other facilities, such as these walk-in centres, are being closed around the country. Accident and emergency is really the last point that people can go to. If they can't get an appointment with the doctor, they can't go to a walk-in centre, they can't go to NHS Direct, they go to A&E, and everybody is now turning up at A&E. I mean, this is probably the biggest crisis to hit the National Health Service ever, and we're in a situation where actually the main public service broadcaster, the BBC, is hardly covering this crisis. I mean, we get little bits, but certainly no proper real investigations into what's going on, and it's partly possibly due to the fact that Chris Patton, who's the chairman of the board of governors of the BBC, he's a part of this company called Bridgepoint, which is a private healthcare company itself. I mean, how have we got to the situation where, when something like this, so dreadful as this is happening, where you've got a quite serious crisis going on, an accident and emergency right now up at the BRI, I imagine there's a great long queue of people. As the night goes on, there'll be even more, and it'll be almost impossible for them to cope there, people waiting for hours and hours to be seen, that this one system, the BBC, the public service people, aren't properly looking into what's going on and exposing the people responsible for it.
Well, you'll see on the contrary, you'll see the South staff's investigation has been seized on by the government to suggest that the NHS isn't working. Can you see what's going on here? They squeeze the system of resources. They then reorganise things in a more market-friendly direction, having promised not to do so, which actually causes further stress on the system. And then they say, oh, the system isn't working, we'll have to get rid of it altogether. And this is what's going on. And the critique we're making of the National Health Service is all actually grist to their mill. Naomi Klein wrote a book called The Shock Doctrine a few years ago, where she points out how this neoliberal scam works, where you run something into the ground, it gets into a crisis, and then when you've got it in a crisis, you then say, oh, well, we'll have to change everything because it isn't working. And that is the game that's going on. There is definitely a plan. We saw what Boris Johnson said yesterday. We saw what David Cameron said at the Lord Mayor's speech in the City of London the other week. They definitely want to dismantle the welfare state in Britain. That is their ambition. There is no doubt about it, and that is what they're trying to do. And that is why they must lose the next election.
Can I come back? We're pointing out that the two hernia operations that I've come across and other operations that people need and are on the should be on the waiting list for and aren't on the waiting list for because they're not being allowed on them when their doctors refer them, they could easily walk into the A&E as an emergency as well. And that's not helping what's happening to anybody that's going through the system at the moment. Certainly there's been a lot of funding cut back from the NHS. Many of us are aware that there are vested interests with some MPs having roles in companies that are private healthcare.
Well, it's not just MPs, is it? It's doctors on these commissioning boards as well. Some of them have got...
Yes, but in Bath, I sat in a meeting in Bath where 38 Degrees were putting on a campaign in Bath, and Chris Patton did not realise how many, I think it was seven of the doctors in the Bath area were all tied up with private firms for... that were interested in taking over the NHS services for the Bath area. And I think that that should be declared. We're back to who declares what and says what they belong to and their vested interests and how many. I have to declare what my family are doing. I have to declare anything and everything that I do, which should happen. And can I say that I sometimes think that the officers of our local authority also don't do that, and it would be a very good idea if we started setting up a structure that made that right across the board with anybody making decisions on other people's lives.
In Norway, every single person's tax return are available to everybody on the internet and always have been. Everybody knows what everybody's paid and where everybody's money comes from. Makes a very, very interesting reading. And of course, people like George Ferguson, who's the mayor of Bristol, would have to tell you what his assets were, because everybody has to say, not just politicians, everybody. What's the matter with that? If I would say, as an economist, that's basic price information. If I'm making a judgment about the decisions I'm going to make in my life, I want to know what everybody's paid and where they get their money from, so that I can make my decisions with full knowledge.
Okay, we heard about the bedroom tax just now from Jenny Smith, Labour councillor for South Mead. Now let's go to Westminster, where Andy MacDonald brought it up, Prime Minister's questions this week.
Mr. Andy MacDonald.
Mr. Speaker, the Disability Benefits Consortium of over 50 charities have signed a letter to the Secretary of State for DWP calling for immediate action to exempt disabled people from the bedroom tax. Why on earth does he and his government refuse to listen?
Well, obviously what we've done is exempt disabled people who need an extra room, but it does, I think, come back to a basic issue of fairness. And the basic issue of fairness is this: people in private sector rented accommodation who get housing benefit don't get a subsidy for spare rooms, whereas people in council houses do get a subsidy for spare rooms. That's why I think it was right to end that, and it's right to end it thinking of the 1.8 million people in our country on housing waiting lists.
Well, I mean, he's making a point there, Martin, isn't he? There's actually loads and loads of people on housing waiting lists that need these, say, 2 and 3 bedroom properties.
Well, I mean, when he pointed out that there's people in the private sector who cannot afford to have a spare bedroom, that's because, and I'm in the private sector, I'm moving from having a bedroom to a one-room private sector bedsit, because, and that is going to cost far more than somebody in social housing with 2-3 rooms. And of course, the money that I will pay if I'm on that housing benefit will go directly to the landowners, the landlords. And there's no way that the bedroom tax saves any money. It doesn't save any money. You kick people out of social housing and put them into the private sector, you'll find that the bill to the government goes up. They don't see a penny of it, but it goes into the pockets of landlords, who actually vote Conservative anyway.
Isn't it the point that the people then taking over that social housing are people who may have been being housed in bed and breakfast or something beforehand?
Well, yes. I mean, we haven't got enough low-income housing for low-income people. That's because in the 1980s, the Conservative government decided to sell off the social housing stock. And that's why, and then wouldn't allow anybody to build any more. And even if we were to build new council houses in Bristol, we would then have to sell it to the existing tenants under the existing legislation. And then we wonder why we've got 14,000 plus people on the waiting list.
Jenny, is it true what David Cameron's saying there, that all disabled people need an extra room, they're exempt from the bedroom tax?
It wasn't happening with the case that I had. And
I mean, you've seen it on the ground, haven't you? I mean, what he's saying just sounds nonsense
It's not happening. I mean, we did instantly raise what was happening to armed forces, where they couldn't go home to their home after they'd been in the armed forces. And that was one. But there's other things going on right across the board. Can I change the subject? I want to talk about Emerson's Green Hospital, because we are being lobbied on scrutiny to the effect that they have £2.5 million that they've underspent from last year's on money that the government gave them to carry out operations. Now, we have waiting lists for operations, and people are having to wait a very long time to get them. And then we have the next we heard was that this funding was now £6 million that they hadn't spent. What we really need is an in-depth investigation into the people that are getting money, which comes from the NHS and goes to these private contractors. And I don't see enough transparency in the system that the Tory government have set up to investigate where our money, and remember, we as ratepayers and paying taxes of various sorts are paying into that pot, is being spent wisely.
So is this being spent by the North Bristol Trust or the United Hospitals Bristol, the Central Trust?
Well, no. I mean, NHS England now are in charge of all contracts. So it's not the local trusts that are actually paying it. What seems to be happening is people aren't being referred there, and or they are refusing to take cases.
So is this some sort of private hospital?
It's a private hospital. Emerson's Green is a private hospital that is given NHS money to actually carry out operations.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because maybe people are just choosing not to go there, and we're supposed to be being told.
That is a possibility.
We're being told that this is supposed to, you know, be a wonderful new vista of marvellous NHS choice. If people aren't choosing to go there, how come then they've got this massive surplus and they're giving them extra money?
Yeah.
Good question. That's what you're
asking. There needs an auditor.
Okay, back to Westminster, and we also had Geraint Davis this week asking about the Help to Buy scheme. I know this is one of your bugbears and mine, Martin. It's really a Help to Sell scheme designed to help the developers, of course, who can't sell their homes at the very high prices. But this is about, is it really just a subprime mortgage scheme? The same thing that caused the 2008 crash. Geraint Davis here at Westminster.
Mr. Geraint Davis.
Mr. Speaker, house prices are going up at a time that real wages are going down. So does the Prime Minister accept that when interest rates go up after the election, this will detonate a subprime debt crisis of his making?
The greatest danger in terms of interest rates is if we had a government that believed in more borrowing, more spending and more taxing. That is what would drive up interest rates. That is what would hit the cost of living. And that is what every family in this country should dread.
Order.
This Help to Buy, it could also, or Help to Sell, it could also be called Help to Vote, because it's actually very, very political. The idea is to get the swing voters in the key marginal constituencies in the suburban towns around London to have a feel-good factor by the May 2015 when the election comes in, and it's absolutely cynical. The government have basically stopped having austerity for those middle-class people who buy their own houses just in time for them to be pleasantly pleased and vote correctly when the election comes, all of which, of course, is missing the big elephant in the room, which is that there is a massive asset and bond bubble building internationally. It's centred in Wall Street, but a lot of it is found in the City of London, and when it crashes, we're going to be not in Kansas anymore.
What is a subprime mortgage? Why is it so dangerous?
Well, a subprime mortgage is where people basically who couldn't afford to buy something are subsidised to buy it.
Because these help-to-buy schemes are up to 95% mortgages.
Yes, and of course a lot of this is actually subsidy for people who've already got houses they're living in who would like to buy bigger ones, and the government is going to give them a handout. So we're talking about people on sickness benefits who are committing suicide because they're being told they've got to work. Meanwhile, other Tory voting types who are already in quite nice accommodation, I'm going to be given a subsidy by the taxpayer to buy some nicer accommodation.
It seems like everyone is
very
getting
nice
into
for
debt.
Them.
You know, massive debt. Even the rich are being encouraged to get into debt. The poor are going to payday lenders. It seems that debt is the order of the day.
Well,
everyone is
it
supposed
is,
to
but
be
but
in debt.
Personal indebtedness is rising in Britain. And that would explain a lot of the so-called growth in the economy that we've been seeing. What we've been doing is we've been screwing everybody into the floor for the last 2 or 3 years, and now with the election coming, we've got to put some bribes out in the right places. Now, these kind of people on sickness benefit living in inner city areas, they ain't going to vote for us, so it doesn't matter what we do with them, kick them out. But of course, these swing voters in these marginal constituencies who've already got their own houses, they need a bit of a hand up, don't they? Like the people who bought all the shares in Royal Mail. You've got to have £700 to spare to buy those shares. That's the minimum you could invest. Of course, lots of people with a lot more than £700 got in there, and they all got a big freebie at the taxpayers' expense. Because we're not against taxpayer freebies. We're against taxpayer freebies for poor people. Taxpayer freebies for rich people, especially to win an election, absolutely.
I was surprised to see on a documentary about Amazon during the week that they get a massive subsidy from the government just come to
corporate
Swansea.
Welfare.
Just coming to Swansea. They give them tens of millions of pounds.
Yes, they're just providing jobs for everybody, which is what they're supposed to do anyway.
Well, they're not paying tax, Amazon, properly, well, are indeed, they? They're indeed. Keeping their profits out in tax havens. So why are we paying for them to build their factory in Britain? Anyway, Jenny, do you find this whole business of debt a problem in Southmead?
Yes, I do. A number of people have been desperately trying to sort out debts that have accrued because their income just doesn't cover everyday living. So they're forced to borrow money to try to cover the last few days of a month, and then it ends up with next month it's a week, and next month after that it's about 2 or 3 weeks. And so debts are growing like topsy. People are being forced to borrow who've never had to borrow before. And in some cases, I know some of the older people are trying to help and bail things out by providing parts of their family with food and buying things when they break and giving them as a present. But that won't go on forever.
Martin, is there going to be an end to this? Because it does seem that the entire country is being driven into debt in a sort of smaller version of what's going on in the Eurozone with Greece and Portugal and Ireland and these places
being driven into debt. The whole situation is actually dramatically bad. The stock markets in the City of London and Wall Street are reaching new highs. Can you believe this? The stock markets are reaching new highs on the back of quantitative easing. That's where it goes. It goes to keep the asset prices of the wealthy up. Now, this is a massive government intervention. Massive government intervention to keep up the asset prices of the wealthy.
The more money the government's printing and pumping in is only going to the top.
Absolutely. And of course, the wealthy classes used to argue that they were entitled to their wealth because they were entrepreneurs, they had the big ideas. What was it, Boris Johnson was saying, we're the clever ones and then the poor people are the stupid ones. That's why we're entitled to more money. But of course, without the state stepping in to bail out the City of London in 2008, all of these people would be bankrupts. I mean, Hargreaves Lansdown, for example, could be bankrupt, losing all their assets. And incidentally, if we're talking about how can we solve this problem, Peter Galbraith, the son of John Kenneth Galbraith, the economist in the US, has said it's absolutely clear what we've got to do is lock up thousands of top bankers. This is what happened in the 1980s under the Reagan administration when the SNLs collapsed, the savings and loans collapsed. They locked thousands of people up and seized their assets. That is absolutely on the cards. That's what's going to... When there is a crash... And we are really staring down the barrel of a gun, as we will be before the next election, in my view. We are then going to go after the people who thieved all this money and got the government to bail them out, and we're going to take it off them and put them in prison. And if we're not going to do that, we're going to have to do something even more drastic than that. In some parts of the world, there is going to be bloodshed, big bloodshed.
But if we actually paid people not just the national minimum wage, which many aren't getting and should be getting, if we... paid them a living wage, then they would go out and buy things which would actually pump the income back up again.
Jenny,
for everybody else.
Isn't this the problem, that the minimum wage in many cases isn't actually a living wage?
We need to raise the minimum wage wage
we've
level.
Yes, that's why it's
as
a
energy
living,
prices
living
go
wage
up,
is higher. The national minimum wage is £6.30, somewhere like that. Now, what's being suggested is a higher wage, about £1 or £2 more, per hour, which would actually pump money back into the economy.
But back in Westminster, our final clip today is from Alex Cunningham. This is from Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday. He's talking about how real wages are down now, £1,600 on average per person.
Mr. Alex Cunningham.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister once said he wanted to see rising living standards for all, not just rewards for those in high finance. Why then are real wages down by over £1,600 while bank bonuses are up by 83%?
Happening is because we are cutting taxes, disposable income went up last year. And what we have done is lift the first £10,000 that people earn out of tax altogether. That is worth £700 for every person who pays that tax. That is something you should be welcoming. In addition, we have frozen the council tax, cut the petrol duty, and helped in all sorts of ways with families' income. Every single step opposed by the party opposite.
Well, I mean, that just says it all, doesn't it? I mean, the universal credit actually takes, if it was put into practice, which it probably won't because it's crashing and burning, takes that money away, which is the £10,000 personal tax limit. And don't forget, everybody gets that as well. If we wanted to help the poorest, that's you don't pay tax until you've got to £10,000. That money also goes to the richest as well. Very handy for them, eh? Another handout.
Well, we've also had the shocking news this week about Royal Bank of Scotland, Martin, actually closing down companies where they don't need to do it and taking money from them, simply asset stripping businesses.
Yes, because the Royal Bank of Scotland...
This is a government-run bank.
Yes, because the Royal Bank of Scotland has got to get back into profit so it can be sold back to the private sector. That's what their mission is. What we should have done when we took the banks over is nationalise the banks and run them as nationalised banks.
Well, that has been
That's what we should be doing. Yes,
that
I know, but what we did is we then run it at arm's length and we put the same old people in charge and said, what we want you to do is turn it back into a profit so we can get our money back. When we nationalised the banking system in 2008, we bottled the follow-through, which is actually run it as a nationalised banking
system. A bit
cheeky,
Jenny, don't you think, for a nationalised bank to actually close down perfectly viable businesses and asset strip them?
I'm really worried about it. What it's actually done is brought people who were struggling, probably, but who were surviving down onto their knees and left them with multiple debts at the end of the day. That can do- you think of a person running a firm as one individual. That individual possibly has a wife and children and is employing other people. That decimated other people's jobs right across the board.
Blogger Ian Fraser, who is also the head of the Scottish Sunday Herald's finance section, fantastic blog, ianfraser.org, F-R-A-S-E-R, was on the Max Kaiser show. And he is talking about financial terrorism, Martin, by the Royal Bank of Scotland.
Well, this is what's going on. People are gradually waking up to what's happened here. We have basically, most of what the City of London and Wall Street has been engaged in is actually fraudulent under existing law. Mainstream politicians don't want to say this because they think it's all about elections. But if you break the law, like stealing a bottle of water during a riot, you can go to prison. And I would like to say that to all of the people, including Hargreaves and Lansdowne in this city. If you break the law, you're going to prison. Of course, after the crash, there will be no mercy for those people who are caught with their fingers in the till.
Jenny, what are your thoughts about what people can do if they're faced with these financial terrorists? Their bankers are supposed to be there to help their business thrive, are actually doing precisely the opposite.
Well, what worries me is within the George's budget and the budget that we've had visited upon us because of what's coming from the central government.
Sorry, Jenny, going to have to stop you. It was only a quick answer I had over there. That's Jenny Smith, Labour Councillor for Southmead. After the news, Chancellor George Osborne. And his little bit of fun with cocaine.
I'm going to say go to an advice centre, but he's cutting them.
BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 6. A court has heard soldier Lee Rigby was run over and attacked with a knife and meat cleaver in a cowardly and callous